Hello, and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about two new movies that are out in the theater, Old and Pig. It's so funny to juxtapose those two things together, Mike, because, you know, it makes me think of Some Pig, which makes me think of Charlotte's Web, which we'll talk about when we get to Pig. But let's start with Old, which is the latest M. Night Shyamalan movie. Did I say that right, Mike? I find his name, I always have to like think it through as I say it. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Likewise, Marie, you know, whenever I'm writing about him, I always have to look at it carefully, like letter by letter. It's so yes. easy to misspell it and mispronounce it and so on. So from now on, you know, we'll just say the guy who made the movie.
You know, I actually think M. Night is one of the coolest names of all time. I think he should just, you know, skip that last part because everybody knows who that is, right? So I know this, there was a lot of anticipation for this movie. The premise is fascinating, that there's this strange beach where you age very rapidly, but the people who end up on the beach don't get a heads up that this is what's going to happen to them. It just unveils, kind of like, you know, real life, where you suddenly realize one day that aging is happening, whether you want it to or not, and it always seems too fast. So I know this had a lot of buzz, that people were excited about going to see it. Where do you want to start with this aging on the beach story, Mike? There's so many ways to attack it, but which way do you want to go first?
Well, putting the film in context in terms of the director, think about The Sixth Sense, think about movies like The Village he's made since then. Almost always his films are metaphysical puzzles, and they almost always have a twist at the end, as predictably as like the No Henry short story back in the day. You know, you sort of get to the final pages or final minutes and think, okay, now what? And I think that's one reason why his career suffered a bit, because there was a certain predictability that set in. You know what I mean? It's just like, okay, another ridiculous premise, and there's going to be some big twist at the end, and you sit there waiting for it. And there might be other reasons why his career did kind of taper off a bit, but he's bounced back, and we can talk about that a bit. And I think in this case, what helps the film is twofold. One is it actually does have a really viable premise. You know, you're going to this tropical resort and you just expect to have a nice time on the beach, and they're really nice to you. They're so nice. They have specialty cocktails they make for the adults, and they take you off to this isolated beach. And then lo and behold, you discover the film's premise, namely that for some, and they try to explain it in the film, and I'm glad they don't try to explain it too much, because it's just so loony. It's so ridiculous. So many laws of nature and of physics are violated. You just got to go with it, right? You either go with it or you don't go with it. Anyway, if you go with it, the premise is that in a half hour, you will age 1 year. And at first, they only gradually notice it, you know, like something's not quite right. And then it's like so pronounced, particularly in cases like among the adults. It's OK. Somebody's got a gray hair. Somebody else has got a few wrinkles. You know, it takes a little while. But then it's like among the teenagers, among the younger characters, it's like, oh, my Lord, you know, what happened to my child who's now a teenager, who's now a young adult? And of course, to me, I smiled because I thought, well, you know, parents always say, you know, the kids grow up so fast these days, and these kids really do grow up super fast. And so even though it's not a funny movie, it is sometimes just by way of being how bizarre it is. So anyway, one thing that I think helps the film is that it's a really intriguing premise, and it's developed logically to the extent you can be logical with something like this. The second thing that helps it is the film is uniformly well acted, much better than one might expect. Sometimes films like this have got sort of like, you know, shoddy acting or like over the top histrionics. And there's a little bit of that. But you know what? For the most part, it's just very convincing in terms of the performances. So while I wasn't exactly crazy about the film, it really held my interest. I found it quite, you know, engaging as to, well, if you were in this situation, what would happen to you and those you love and the other people along for the ride? And then because it is well acted, there's a plausibility, if you will, within the overall implausibility. And it doesn't rely to the same extent as some of his other films on like this huge twist at the end or something. It's more a matter of following through on what that initial premise would lead you up to.
Now, I'm going to give you points for metaphysical puzzle, because that is such a great way to sum up this director's work, because all of the movies that he's famous for, The Sixth Sense, etc., Split, do have certain things in common, supernatural realities. This is the first one that's actually broken out of Philadelphia. I think all of his other movies at least reference that city. You know, quiet characters, young outcasts, you know, the God's eye angle, the use of reflections. And that's interesting too, because one of the things I think it does nice is a metaphor. in terms of, you know, mirroring what it's like to age slowly, is that you don't see yourself. You know, other people see you in a way that you don't see yourself. So the people trapped on this beach, things are happening to them, and then they're reacting to the way other people are reacting to them. So the children who start off, a couple of them are just be 6 years old when it starts. You know, there's these wonderful scenes, I think, where they're, you know, looking at the parents like, why are you so freaked out? You know, what's the matter? What are you seeing that I'm not seeing? Which I think is just kind of a nicely done metaphor. I will say that I'm not a big fan of horror, so I'm not an aficionado of this type of movie, but I thought it did get some things really right. I did like the friendship between the two boys before they end up on the islands. He has this link to somebody outside of what's happening to them. And of course, the, you know, the clues for that give them some plot points to use later without giving away the story. In terms of a movie about how you age really rapidly in certain circumstances, I couldn't help think about Lost Horizon, which made a huge impact on me when I saw it. You know, the idea you end up in this, you know, strange place, and then everything's fine as long as you stay there. But when you leave, all of a sudden you age extremely rapidly. That's the, you know, I just gave away Lost Horizon, sorry. But it also reminded me of, you know, other movies like that, where they try to play with the idea of that sort of, you drop out of time in a way, and then things happen differently in this area. Did this movie make you think of any other movies? Because it also reminded me of Picnic at Hanging Rock, the way they dealt with the kids and the games that they were playing and the mystery of it all. Did you see those allusions?
Yeah, I definitely saw those allusions. And in particular with Lost Horizon, and on a personal note, for whatever reason, as a kid, you know, I had read James Hilton's novel, Lost Horizon, and then had probably, you know, late night television or something, had seen the Frank Capra film, the film version of it. And it is one of those premises where it's like, oh my goodness, you know, this Shangri-La, you know, what conditions are like. And as you go from place to place, and I don't think I even had the word metaphysics in my vocabulary at that point, but something hit me that way. And there's a kind of enduring or lasting influence of a film like that. So you're absolutely right. You know, from when I was a small one, and then I grew up in natural time. I didn't leap ahead quite as much as some of the characters do, but there's that sense that, you know, certain films do stay with you that way. Yeah, absolutely. The second thing that you mentioned that I want to pick up on is that in terms of viewer preference, I know you're not a particularly big fan of horror. I tend to be very selective which horror films I like and which I don't care for, but I know you, generally speaking, aren't a big fan of horror films. To the credit of this film, and actually the director's other films as well, even though the material could easily lead into R-rated terrain in terms of just really extreme and horrific things happening to the characters, I think partly, or not just partly, I think probably mostly for box office reasons, this director tends to keep a PG-13 rating. And it seems to me that, you know, this is a film that you want to get, you know, children and teenagers watching it so they can start thinking about, you know, well, this movie will last around 2 hours. And then when I leave, I should look in a mirror and see how I look. You know, it does start, you think, and if you go with your parents or something, you know, you start thinking about generations and, you know, and joking aside, it does sort of prompt thoughts about the aging process. And if somehow it were sped up, what would that mean? So anyway, without spoiling the story in terms of individual characters and what happens to them, that is really extreme. The film is very careful about how that is shown. You know, where there is violence, they tend to cut away pretty quickly. If there's a dead body, the camera doesn't get too close, or at least doesn't linger too long. And for my taste, actually, that's even more effective because you get the effect of it, but you don't feel like you're watching a, you know, a grisly documentary or an exploitative film, let's put it that way, that's really trying to make the most of it. It plants the psychological horror, which is always more effective than something like really graphic. And I think, Marie, that's one reason why you probably like this film more than some other horror films that you've seen. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that, you know, in some ways, horror movies with monsters and the supernatural can never match, you know, the terrible things that man has figured out to do to other men. And I don't like those movies either, to be honest. I don't get a visceral thrill out of that kind of scare, you know, like, ooh, I don't like that kind of thing. I do like intrigue. So let's talk about the things that we both think that they got right. I thought it was very clever to use Ken Leong, who plays Jaren, because he was previously in Lost, a TV series, which is really popular, came out in 2004, which is also about a mysterious island where, you know, things don't actually follow the regular metaphysical puzzle we're all familiar with. So I thought adding him as a character like that was a nice nod to people who like that sort of stranded on a desert island kind of story, you know, all the Gilligan's Island people as well. I thought that was great casting. I also really, I'm a big fan anyway of Gael Garcia Bernal. And I thought having him play the dad was just a genius casting choice because he's very experienced. He's done a lot of work. He's got a following. And he's sort of an original choice here. What did you think?
Well, first of all, I want to copyright the term metaphysical puzzle. So you have to pay me every time you use that expression.
if you like to, where are we up to now? What's
I know.
Tab?
So by way of synonym, if you want to, you know, we can say existential puzzle or something. But you know, joking aside, there. I mean, that is the nature of this directorial body of work. But anyway, to your point about the acting, when I said a while ago that it's a well-acted film, it really has not a huge cast in terms of big name actors, but it has a few who are known certainly and who are just reliable. In terms of Gael Garcia Bernal, I've shared your admiration for him. Indeed, I do a survey course on Latin American cinema. And when I put together the syllabus, I realized I had three films in which he stars. And it was not by design. I didn't sit down saying, I want to feature this guy in the course. It just as I start saying, well, here's a film from Argentina and here's one from Mexico. And I looked at the list and wait a minute, he's in this one and he's in that one. And actually, the ones I use are Y Tu Mama Tambien from 2001, which really is the film I think that internationally kind of put him on the map. And then that's a Mexican film, Y Tu Mama Tambien. I also use Motorcycle Diaries, which is more or less from Argentina, but he plays the young, you know, with the young Che Guevara on a motorcycle, it goes all through Latin America. So if you say country of origin, well, all countries of origin, it just goes through all of the continents. It's really a marvelous film. The third one I use is No, which is a Chilean political drama. You know what? He's a very young actor in all those, you know, 20s, 30s. He's terrific, right? And indeed, he's still working quite a bit nowadays. This summer, he's in a film, Emma, by Pablo Larraín, the Chilean director who worked with him in No. And, you know, I've been seeing trailers for it. And by the time this show goes out, I'll probably have seen the film. But just the fact that, you know, he's now getting into middle age. And speaking of aging, he's aging well. You know, because I knew him from when I knew him. I mean, I knew him as an actor from his, like in his 20s. And now, you know, 20 years hence, he's holding up really well, whatever his secret is, whatever fountain of youth he has. You know, he's been on some beaches, but not others. Let's put it that way. And you know what works so well for him as an actor here is that not just the talent that the guy has, but the fact that there's a likability. The camera likes him in that sense, too. There's just something ingratiating about his presence on screen. So in this film, he's really well cast in terms of being, you know, someone who is, you know, the character, I would say, is meant to be like late 30s into the 40s. And so, you know, well enough into a marriage where, you know, having kids, they'd be, you know, at the outset in this film, you know, like as you say, like 6 years old, whatever. But you can see them as like relatively young parents. So the full horror of what happens when they see not just the aging in themselves, but the aging in their kids. And here's something that I don't know if this was meant deliberately or not in the film. And not that it bothered me, but I made note of it. As you would expect, if you have a six-year-old child who's gaining years like crazy, before long, it's a teenager and then a young adult. And oh my goodness, you know, the children grow up fast these days kind of thing. But what struck me initially and bothered me a little bit maybe was that the adults in some cases didn't seem to age all that much. You know, they seemed until very late in the film. And then suddenly it's, you know, mortality and, you know, I better lie down. I don't look so good. But for most of the, Marie, for most of the film, did you find this too, like somewhat puzzling and maybe not in a deliberate way that they weren't paying as much attention to like the makeup, if you will, the prosthetics for the adults, at least some of them most of the way through. But having had that as a reservation about the film at the level of plausibility within the implausible premise, I still found myself thinking, well, you know what? I want to be Gael Garcia Bernal because even though he's aging like crazy, he looks great for whatever the age is meant to be. And he's like well into middle age by the time the film reaches the home stretch. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't mind looking like that when I reach that age, whatever. So what was your sense there? Because again, jesting aside on this, it just seemed to me that the film wasn't always entirely consistent within its framework as to who's going to age and how they're going to look at a certain point.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I had the same reaction. It seemed to focus on the aging of the young children way more than the adults who were really kind of carrying the movie in the, you know, first couple of reels. I, especially with Gael Garcia Bernal, I thought he barely aged at all. And in fact, there's even a scene where one of the characters, you know, now has some wrinkles and her husband points it out. Even that, I didn't think was all that ravaged. You know, they could have made her look a whole lot worse, which would have been much, much more dramatic. Now, I do want to mention that M. Night Shyamalan said that the subject matter of the film, in which a group of people find themselves trapped on an isolated beach dealing with a deadly phenomenon, mirrored the experience of being in lockdown and the uncertainty of the coronavirus pandemic, because they did film this while the pandemic was going on. So he says, you know, it was strange. We were making a film that had nothing to do with the pandemic, but at the same time, it was absolutely about this fear and uncertainty we were all feeling, the fear of infection. It made us think very deeply about death, about survival, and about being in lockdown. This idea of being stuck in a situation and not being able to leave. How well do you think that played out in this film?
You know, I wondered the same thing as I was watching the film. I thought, goodness sakes, you know, we have our own existential worries through the pandemic. And what I finally concluded, and I don't know this in a definitive way, but what struck me is the film was actually shot in the Dominican Republic. And my hunch, and it's just pretty much like a hunch, is that because of the nature of the story, whatever resort they found and or constructed, and certainly once they get out into nature, they're in some really isolated locations. So my assumption, let's put it that way, my assumption was they found a location or several locations that already were so distanced, were so isolated, that so long as they had, you know, whatever testing and preventive and protective measures they needed, they could shoot the film in a reasonably safe way. I mean, do you share that sense that, you know, some movies, you know, just weren't being made at all during the pandemic, others under tightly controlled situations? I thought that this was a case of where, well, if you're going to make the movie and take certain chances, this is a relatively safe bet by way of you have, there are some scenes with quite a few extras, like in a hotel lobby, whatever. But once you get to the heart of the story, meaning most of the film is taking place on that beach, it's really just a handful of characters. So if you have a relatively small cast and crew, it seems to me that you have nice control over your situation and you're not placing yourself at great risk. What do you think about that? Because it actually is, there's nothing overtly in the story to tip you off. And they easily could have done that in a script. Somebody could make a ponderous statement, whatever. But I think it's just inherent in the material and in the way it's shot.
I think you are definitely onto something with that because, I mean, they got to shoot outside, which is safer. And you're right, there weren't a whole lot of people on the beach to shoot. So, you know, social distancing was at least easier to do than if you're trying to do, you know, some sort of epic battle. I do want to mention that there's a character named Charles that cannot think of a movie that stars both Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson, which is The Missouri Breaks. The plot of that movie has nothing to do with this. And I can tell you this for a fact because you probably saw it when it came out, but I looked it up and watched it. I'm trying to find some reason to include this as an anecdote, and I cannot find it. What am I missing, Mike?
You're not missing anything. The film has some pop cultural references, some of which are directly relevant or worth pondering, others of which are totally arbitrary. The moment they, you know, they mentioned, you know, there's this film and I can't think of the title and it's Jack Nicholson and Warren Brown, I actually wanted to shout, Missouri Breaks, which might have disturbed people around me in the theater because I'd seen that film first. It's not a particularly good film, but it's interesting casting, you know, it's quirky casting. So that's one where it just seems to me it's an arbitrary pop cultural reference. Others are a bit more pointed. For instance, the Gail Garcia Bernal character, the actress Vicky Kripes, who plays his wife, they're on the beach and, you know, you do your beach reading. And she's actually reading a dual biography of Sartre and de Beauvoir. And so she's actually reading about existentialism on the beach. And the movie doesn't make a big deal of that, but there's like a, you know, at least a shot or two, you can see the book she's reading. And so there are times where the director wants to point you in a direction or have some fun with it. But others are just kind of toss off. And I think that's the nature of our pop culture is we free associate sometimes. It's just like, you know, these references bounce around. And maybe the film is a little sloppy of that because, for instance, the Missouri Breaks line, like that's the kind of inside joke thing where like, if you're an audience member and you get it, you're really proud of yourself for getting it. And you almost want to like shout it out and let people know, I know what that is, you know, and you didn't know, but I know, you know, there's that whole quality to it. But you know what? And this is ultimately where I think it backfires a bit. It was distracting. It got me like you wondering, well, what is there a connection here? And I wasn't thinking sometimes about the dialogue I was hearing. because I was thinking about Missouri Breaks. Secondly, that line, even if it's worth having, it gets repeated at least a few times. It's like a fixation for this character. You know, he can't think of it. And to me, it just seems like, after all, let it go. You know, it's not worth, if it's going to be a toss-off, just let it be a toss-off. But to have it tossed off three or four times at least, that actually bothered me a little bit after a while. What do you think? It just seemed like the director's getting a little silly with it.
I agree, because, you know, the repeated reference to it made you think it had more import than it did. You know, it wasn't just about not being able to remember a movie. I mean, they kept coming back to it. So yeah, it gave it more significance than I think it should have had. So before we move on to Pig, where do you think this movie goes in the canon of M. Night movies?
Well, again, I'm not his biggest fan, because oftentimes so many of the films seem to have like a ludicrous premise and they weren't always particularly well acted or shot. This one, as I said earlier, has a really viable premise. It is really well acted and it's actually well directed. I don't think all his films are well directed. This one is. In addition to some of the camera work and techniques we've mentioned earlier, one thing we haven't mentioned is he uses a lot of panning shots in the film. And what makes them so effective is, when you think about a slow pan across the beach, you know, you'll have certain characters and how they look and what they're going through at the moment, and then it pans over to some other people or just nature, and then it pans back. And even in the time it takes just for that pan, something's changed, right? Someone's got older. Actually, you can get really old in the time that the pan takes place, but also the story gets advanced in certain ways. And it's a kind of technical strategy that he is consistent with. And so I think the film is better made. And as I've been saying, by the time it gets into the home stretch, yeah, it's a really extreme storyline at this point, but it doesn't seem as arbitrary, as tacked on as some of his other films can be. So in terms of his canon, if I can put it that way, I think it actually is one of his better films, because I really have not liked some of his other films at all. But this one, I think, really, you know, held my interest. And I think, for the reasons we've stated, I think holds up pretty well.
I agree. And for people who are going to watch it, make sure you look for his cameo as the bus driver. It's a good movie, but I think the premise, like the people in it, it gets old fast. So let's move on to Pig. And we have used up a lot of our time, so we need to be very brief about Pig. So let's get right to the fact of the Nicolas Cage performance, because I think it's the strongest thing about the movie. But tell me what you think of this in terms of whether you think Nick Cage is up for an Academy Award for this performance. And also, you know, if you can summarize for our audience, you know, the synopsis of the movie.
Well, basically, in terms of the storyline, Nicolas Cage plays someone, and we learn this only as the story goes along, but who had a life as a professional chef and, you know, was respected and you know, very successful and so on. And for reasons that get explained, or to some extent explained in the film, he's living in isolation, and it's just Nick Cage as this character whose only companion for the most part is his pig. He has a pet pig. Now, ostensibly because it's a truffle hunting pig, but we learn very early in the film, so I'm not spoiling much here, is that he also has a really good nose for finding truffles. And that's how he's making enough money to support himself out in the wilderness. So when the pig is kidnapped, and again, that's maybe spoiling a little bit, but when he's separated from his pig, let's put it that way, he's very upset about that. And it becomes a revenge drama. He wants his pig back, ostensibly because it's a truffle hunter, it's a moneymaker, but it's his companion, he cares for it. So he has to go back into civilization, if you will, to try to find his pig. But to cut to the chase in terms of Nicolas Cage, think of that career. And beginning in the 80s with a number of films, you know, including some for his uncle Francis Ford Coppola, you know, he's making a name for himself. He really hits a stride, I think, with Moonstruck in 1987, Raising Arizona the same year. He's terrific in those films. And he gives over-the-top performances that are merited, because these are like over-the-top characters, right? And then he wins the Academy Award as Best Actor, speaking of Oscars, for Leaving Las Vegas in 1995. But what happens in his career, to put it in very brief terms, is it takes a slide, doesn't it? Because in the years or even decades since then, he picks like really bad material. He's incredibly over the top. And so by the time you get to Pig, I was watching with an audience that, based on the trailer and based on his track record, was prepared to laugh through the whole thing. And you could tell, as people watched the film, that they thought, no, wait a minute, Nicolas Cage is not overplaying this. He's actually underplaying it. And his character has very few words. And when he speaks, it's monosyllabic. And Cage tamps it down. It's a really tightly controlled performance. It's really very effective. Yeah, he might well get an Academy Award nomination, but whether he does or not, he's showing that as an actor, he has his chops. He can still do it. Because think about Cage at his worst. Films like Ghost Rider, where he's this daredevil, motorcycle rider who's got some kind of compact with the devil. Try figuring this out. But, and the character's name is Johnny Blaze, and he's blazing a trail through a film. He's so bad that in the New York Times, and the film's so bad, and its sequel, the New York Times said in its review, as for Mr. Cage, the only thing he should be firing is his manager. So much for lighting up the screen there with this daredevil blazing flames. But anyway, with that kind of background, this film itself, Pig, is something in the nature of a redemption, don't you think? It really shows that as an actor, he's got the chops and he doesn't have to do bad material and he doesn't have to have everything over the top. What do you think?
I think you've hit on the point of the movie, redemption and loss and dealing with that. And for Nick Cage fans out there, you need to know up front that he looks like 6 miles of bad road in this movie. But what is, things that you should know, because it's impressive, is that according to the director, he only had 20 days to make the movie. So all the actors had to get everything right from the first time because there was no budget for reshoots or delays. And the budget was very small, so they couldn't hire a trained pig. So, in the after film Q&A, the director revealed that the pig only had 3 days of training and bit Nicolas Cage multiple times. So after one of the bites, he said, I've been set on fire, I've been in flipped cars, but it'll be sepsis from a pig bite that kills me. So, given the extremely tight filming time and what they've actually accomplished, I do want to, mention that I thought the cinematography was beautiful. And what I liked about it, what I like about any movie, if it's possible, is I've never seen this movie before. I've never seen this premise. I've never seen this concept. And I was in the mood for something different. So I thought it was a beautiful movie that has a chance of, a Best Picture nod, depending on what else comes out this year. What do you think, Mike? Final thoughts.
Well, it's a really unusual story. And that's one reason why it really held my interest. Like, what is this going to be about? And Nicolas Cage, oh no, we're in for it. And then, your expectations going into it, but then the film itself really, spins your head almost. Like, wait a minute, this isn't the film I was expecting based on a title like Pig and based on Nicolas Cage's background. Whether or not it gets Academy Award nominations, it would be worth getting them just to have that title announced from the stage. And the winner is Pig. I mean, that would be so funny at the Oscars, wouldn't it?
I'm going to root for it. And I didn't mean that pun was not intended, but I'm going to root for it just for that reason, Mike, because I'm with you on that. But that does bring us to the end of our episode. Don't forget to check out our other episodes, which are available at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And you can also find them under Dragon Digital Radio on Spotify and Pandora. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.